other than having the cow, there was nothing more that we do now that I didn't do back then. So it's not like we were living in the city and now we're living in the country and everything's changed. It's actually just been a very natural progression. We've added a few more things since then.
Hey guys, it is the season 3 finale of the Freely Rooted podcast. I'm your host, Corey, and today my co-host Fallon and I are sitting down with Lisa from Farmhouse on Boone. She is the most frequently shared YouTube channel in my Facebook community, and we love her in there. But it actually wasn't until my neighbor Maddie brought over some sourdough French bread that she learned how to make through Lisa that I was like, oh my gosh, we have to get this girl on our show. So Lisa, Fallon, myself, and many of you listening share our same love of all things home, whether that's home birthing, homeschooling, homemaking, homesteading. So we just thought it'd be really cool to have Lisa on and basically walk us through how she got started creating this handmade home of hers. And many of you listening are already interested in homesteading, but a lot of you guys, you know, don't necessarily live on a homestead or are ready to start one, but you're just trying to learn how to make the most of your current space when it comes to, you know, self-sufficiency or making your own food, making your own sourdough. So whether you are starting a homestead and are looking for some beginner tips, or you are in an apartment right now, you are going to walk away so inspired on your homemaking journey. And what's hilarious is that one thing we learned about Lisa whenever we recorded this interview is that before she moved on to the homestead where she's at now, there was virtually nothing she wasn't doing before when she lived in a house with a much smaller space. She had backyard chickens in her small backyard. She had a garden. She was fermenting food and making yogurt and all kinds of things that she's doing now. There's like virtually no difference besides the fact that she has, you know, a milking cow and goats now. So she gave a lot of helpful tips to, you know, make all that happen for yourself, no matter what kind of space that you're in. So I know you guys will enjoy this episode for so many different reasons, but before we get into it, I have a discount code for you guys from my absolute favorite place to source meat. And guys, if you don't already know about Force of Nature, I'm honestly thrilled to be the one that is introducing you to it, because I remember the first time I was introduced to it, I found my very first Force of Nature product in our little health food store on the island where I live last year. It's just an ancestral beef blend, and it's what I make my ancestral beet burgers with, which I'll add a link to that recipe in the show notes. And I started following them on Instagram after that and was just completely blown away by the mark that they are leaving right now in the world and what all they are doing for not only the land, but for us, the consumers. And basically, they are a company that has this standard that they actually came up with on their own, because a certification doesn't exist for the kind of standard that they have for their meat. It's called the Land Steward Index, and it's basically built from their, you know, foundation and passion for regenerative agriculture, and their care for the soil and the way that they respect diversity in plants and animals on the land. And maybe the bigger picture of that is the focus on natural outcomes versus synthetic input. So that means no tilling, no synthetic chemicals, no hormones or antibiotics, and then obviously the beautiful wide open spaces for the animals to roam. And if you're new to this topic of regenerative agriculture, definitely go listen to our previous podcast episode with the Strong Sisters. But basically, Force of Nature goes out and partners with ranches from all over that meet their standards, the standard that they came up with, and, you know, who are able to pledge to honor that commitment to both the animal and the land and the consumer. And the end result of that is, number one, support for these farmers who are really trying to do it right and really trying to regenerate the soil and think about the long-term sustainability of what we are doing with animals and land and soil. Number two, the end result is the best tasting meat around that gets into your hands as the consumer. And then number three, obviously optimizing the health of you, the animals, and the soil. So it's just a win-win all around. And this is obviously why we are obsessed with them. And I love this relationship that we've gotten to build together. So they have so generously given myself and Fallon a $15 off code to give to you guys. And I will link it in our show notes. You can also type in your zip code on the website that is linked right there to find a local supplier near you. So like me being able to find their meat in a local health food store shows up on that webpage whenever I type in my zip code there. And if I can give my recommendations, because you might be totally overwhelmed and blown away by all of the options on their site, because there's so many, I would highly, highly recommend getting the cherry and chipotle venison and beef sausage blend or the wild boar chorizo. Thank me later, guys. And if you end up ordering something, definitely tag us so we can see what you got. All right, guys, we so enjoyed this season. We're wrapping up with this episode and we will see you guys in season 4.
All right. Welcome to the show, Lisa. We are so glad to have you on. And for our listeners, Lisa's Instagram account is Farmhouse on Boone, which you may have seen in the context of sourdough recipes, blogging, DIY projects, all things farmhouse. So Lisa, you have 7 kiddos and live on 7 acres in an old Victorian farmhouse, which I have to be honest, sounds like an absolute dream. And it sounds like you have a background of, you know, growing up on a farm and loving all things homemade and fermented and holistic wellness. And I love that you have turned all of these things on all of these passions into this beautiful career where you now use your blog, your podcast, your Instagram to share all about DIY projects, you know, homemaking, everything centered around the home. And I love the little blurb in your Instagram bio that says handmade home. And we love that you are a fellow lover of just everything centered around the home, you know, homemaking, home birthing, homeschooling, homesteading. And so we'd love to hear, you know, what inspired this journey for you? It does sound like you had some background of being on, you know, a farm and homesteading and that kind of thing when you were growing up. But what sort of landed you where you are today? You know, is this desire something you were always drawn to, you know, have a big family and own a farm and do everything at home? What has your journey looked like to getting where you are now?
So I did grow up on a farm, but it was actually a different, it wasn't a homestead. So we never had chickens. We never had, I guess we had a garden maybe a couple of years, but we just did that because we were in 4-H and we entered our vegetables into the 4-H. But I actually grew up on an elk farm, which is very different, but, and cattle. We had elk and cattle and then stray cats. I don't even remember why, like how I started getting into this, because whenever I went to high school and college, I kind of always imagined that I would just get a job. And I don't know that I actually had this, you know, thought that we're going to have a whole, we definitely didn't think we were going to have a whole lot of children. That kind of came about as we were married and started having kids. But we lived in town and we actually lived in an old house. And I really liked the charm and character of making over this old house. And so I knew that we wanted to continue with that. That we kind of fell into by accident because at the time, we were just trying to find something pretty low budget. And the house that we came across was that home. But I actually really fell in love with the old home and the character. And then as we had more kids, I really desired to get them out to where we could let them go outside without worrying about them. That was like my number one thing. And then I also wanted access to good food. And there's just not really a way. I mean, there are sources, but to have that something that we could do was something I really desired. So I wanted a space where we could have a dairy cow or dairy goats. That was always a dream for me since probably the last 10 years. I wouldn't say I dreamt of that as a little girl or anything. Mm-hmm. No thoughts of that whatsoever, but I love it now.
Mm-hmm. I feel like that's, as we get older and we reprioritize what is important to us, it makes sense why our dreams shift and change. And it's so funny how like one minute it's this and then the next it's like, I just want a dairy cow. That's like all I want in life. And
yeah.
So in that house, cause you originally lived in this house on Boone Street, and prior to purchasing your farmhouse on 7 acres and getting into everything that you are in now, something I love that you did from the stories that you shared is you really took it upon yourself to make the most of the space that you had. And I know that many that listen to our podcast aren't necessarily ready to like go purchase, you know, a lot of acreage, but are just like wanting to learn how to get started now with more like self-sufficiency and, you know, home skills and things like that. So what did you start with? Cause you guys had backyard chickens and a garden in the Boone house, right?
So I was actually talking to my husband about this at lunch today. Cause I was telling him, I looked through the outline that you guys sent over and I said, they're going to ask me what we did before we moved here. And Luke's like, everything pretty much outside of goats and a cow, which we've been getting raw milk from a local dairy for 13 years.
Wow.
So we did all of it. We just simply didn't milk the cow out, but people thought because I started this blog called Farmhouse on Boone and it was this old white house with a fence that we were out in the middle of nowhere, but really we were on a quarter acre and we were right next door to a public park. So like people were walking their dogs literally right past. It was just the tiniest little lot.
and we had a garden, we had chickens. I don't even honestly still know if they were allowed in town. I don't know, but we never asked. And I was ready for him to hide me some goats behind the garage until we finally found this place. But we had the garden, I fermented foods, I fermented dairy from a local dairy. I sourced everything. So I had, you know, different co-ops, and we went up to an Amish community nearby to pick up grains and bulk, you know, spices. And let's see what else. Sourdough bread. I started my sourdough starter over 11 years ago. I've had it, you know, I've had it that long. All of it. I mean, there was pretty much, other than having the cow, there was nothing more that we do now that I didn't do back then. I learned how to sew and make, you know, all my own aprons and tea towels and bags for the farmer's market and find local farmers, and all of that has been going on this whole time. So it's not like we were living in the city and now we're living in the country and everything's changed. It's actually just been a very natural progression. We've added a few more things since then.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we were on the same train of thought there. I'm really impressed and encouraged that you guys did so much with such little space, because I think that's a big concern that most people have, is that they look at, you know, maybe somebody like you or somebody else who has land and think like, oh my gosh, that's what I need to be able to get started on my homesteading journey. But I mean, the truth is you really can do a lot with a little, you know. I think did you say you guys were on a quarter of an acre before?
Yeah. And I mean, if it hadn't been a quarter acre, I could have still done 90% of it within the kitchen. And then with sourcing. So, you know, people are like, well, I don't have a dairy cow, so I can't make that milk kefir. I'm like, oh, I've been making that milk kefir long before we had a dairy cow. And I had access to several different farms. And so I really could have, if I really wanted to, which I still don't even do now, but I could have gone and gotten 6 gallons and made my own cheese and all of it, you know?
So I think one of the questions that probably all three of us get, especially you, because Corey and I feel like are dabbling in this arena a little bit, you know, like I know we both have like gardens and we try to make stuff at home, like, you know, sauerkraut. And I mean, to be honest, I have just demolished like 5 sourdough starters at this point. So I'm not super impressive in this area, but I have aspirations to be. And I love that you've had a starter for 11 years. That's like just next level impressive to me. But for people who do live in a really small space and are in suburbia, or maybe even like an apartment complex, where would you tell them to start in terms of homemaking and homesteading? You know, regardless of the amount of space that you have, what are some things that people can put into place? I mean, like right now, to get started on their, you know, sustainability journey?
I would say to find sources. So for all the things that you wish that you were doing, find a farmer who is, and then learn how to make sourdough bread, or even just bread. It doesn't have to be sourdough bread. I started with regular bread whenever, you know, before I had my sourdough starter, learned what a smooth elastic dough feels like, learned how to ferment vegetables, cooking from scratch, learn how to, you know, cook a whole chicken and not just do baked breasts or whatever. So just starting in the kitchen, I think, is the first place to begin in sourcing.
Mm-hmm. And was everything pretty self-taught, or were you utilizing like books, YouTube, friends? Like, how did you outsource learning, or did you literally just like look in front of you and then just like basically teach yourself?
So back then there wasn't Instagram, but there was blogs. So I was reading, let's see here, Wardy. Do you know Wardy from Gnalfklins? Or no, now she's not Gnalfklins anymore. She's Traditional Cooking School.
Oh.
So she taught me a lot. I had the Nourishing Traditions book. I can't even remember anymore. This has been so long ago. We're talking like when my daughter, who's 13, was a baby, was when I was like exploring all of this. Totally. I don't even remember who taught me sourdough originally. I don't even know. It wasn't YouTube. It wasn't Instagram, but I guess it was blogs and books at the time.
Mm-hmm. And have you found that, like with sourdough, it's so interesting because there was something I just learned actually last month how to make it. And I really just desire, even though we use somebody's online guide to learn how to make it, I just so wanted another woman in the kitchen and like sitting there with me and teaching me that. And there's something so beautiful about reteaching what you've learned. I feel like that's basically what you've done on your platform. And is that kind of what inspired the beginnings of your blog, was just like, hey, I've learned a lot, and I want to share that with the world and inspire other people the same way. Is that kind of what inspired it?
Yeah, definitely. That was how I felt. It was after, let's see here, like 6 years ago. So probably after a good 6 years of learning all of these things, wanting to bring that to people who are still, you know, curious about it. I had people in real life asking me questions, wanting me to make them things. I'm like, how about I just show you how to do it?
For sure. And you mentioned nourishing traditions. Is that what you like started whenever you've had your first child, your daughter, 13 years ago? Were you into the Weston A. Price way of eating even before then? Or was that kind of what started your like nourishing traditions journey?
Yeah. So when she was first born, I was really interested in health. I did not have a clue what I was doing. I mean, down to like, when I wean her, should I give her soy milk type of thing? And yeah, that's where I was. So I didn't know anything at all. Very conventional. I mean, I nursed her till she was over one, mostly because I didn't want to spend the money on formula, but I still didn't have the vision for why. And I also, that was not normal around me at all. Like my mom never nursed at all. Wow. Nobody, I don't even know that I'd ever seen anybody nurse, because I actually had my first child really young, or not really young, but I had just turned 23. None of my friends had kids. I think one time I saw somebody at Sunday school nursing, and I honestly thought it was a little bit strange. And here now, like, I've nursed 7 children. I've never even used a drop of formula. So I fully have the vision for it now, but it was mostly just like, this is cheaper. It's probably healthier. I also did cloth diapers for the same reason, but then I actually started really questioning things after a few things happened with my daughter. So a few times where I took her in for an ear infection and they recommended antibiotics, and then she had a yeast infection, and right away I started realizing that something wasn't right with the whole system. Yeah. And so I started doing a lot of research. I think the first nutrition book I read was, it was called something about eating for the Bible. Oh, I forget what his name was, but he went through the Bible and explained like what God meant for food, what he didn't. And so his was very whole grains based, but then I started reading about phytic acid and soaking and fermenting. And then that's what started me on to nourishing traditions and Weston Price.
So cool. That's so cool. That is really an interesting point about how 13 years ago, I'm trying to do the math. That was early in the
2000s. 2008. Yeah. That's when she was born.
And it was still, do you feel like that was more the area in which you lived at the time? I understand that you and your husband, when you first got married, you got pregnant in the first year, or like actually the first few months, right?
She was due on the first anniversary.
On your
first. So I guess we got pregnant 3 months after.
Wow. Yeah. And then if I'm remembering, it was like you lived in a property at the time that was it owned by your church that you guys were going to?
Yeah.
Okay. And, so like, do you feel like with the whole breastfeeding topic, I'm just curious, like, do you think it was the area in which you lived where it was like kind of more taboo to breastfeed, and especially breastfeed in public back then?
Yeah, it's definitely not now, but I would say that back then, and it might've just been me. Like I didn't have any friends with babies. So I think, I don't know how the trends work like across the nation, but I know in like the 90s and the 80s, nobody nursed. Like pretty much, I mean, very low. Yes. And then at some point that shifted, but I guess it hadn't shifted long enough for me to see that as normal. I mean, now it's just hilarious because, you know, why wouldn't you? But at the time it felt very strange. A friend of mine, like I said, at Sunday school was nursing, and I just thought that was kind of strange. And now I'm like, what in the world? I've nursed like thousands and thousands of times. I'll probably have to before this interview is over.
Totally. But it makes sense, because you're saying you're the first out of your friends that was having babies, and then the generation above you was the
yeah.
one that was like, yeah, it was like, you don't.
Well, really yeah. And my grandma, she always told me that she didn't make milk, and I didn't have the education behind what I know now to be like, grandma, you didn't even try, because she did twilight sleep, that they used to knock them out, take the baby. And then she thought, I quizzed her later after nursing Ruth and realizing that I could nurse, because I thought that I couldn't, because my mom never nursed and my grandma said she couldn't make milk. But I quizzed her later after I knew what questions to ask, and turns out she never actually nursed. She thought the milk was just going to come out. So they took the baby and then the milk never came out. And so she just fed her. And so I'm like, grandma, you had to actually nurse her to,
oh my gosh,
about to, yeah.
Bless that generation.
I know. And my grandma, she always brags because my mom was on a special study. It was when Enfamil was first coming out, because before then it was pet milk and Karo syrup. And she always says, all my sisters just give theirs pet milk and Karo syrup. And then they came out with a special study, and your mom, she walked at 9 months with that Enfamil. She was so proud of it.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Wow. Yeah. Times have evolved, clearly. And that's actually really cool that you have really pioneered a different lifestyle and approach for your children. And I find you so inspiring and I really do see you as like a pioneer. I see that word over you. And going back to this idea of, I know you mentioned like sourcing being really important whenever you're starting on like making the most of what you have and learning skills. What would you say, like, if you could rank them in like the top three things that you can start like making at home, what are like your, cause I'm sure you get asked the question a lot of time, like where to start. And I know you mentioned this, the sourcing, but like top three things to make at home, what would you say? I mean, sourdough has got to be one of them, but where would you say is your, like your top three suggestions?
Yeah, definitely bread, because it's so simple. You only need basic ingredients. You don't even need oil or sugar. You literally just need flour, water, and salt, which I'm including sourdough starter in that. I would say something fermented. So whether it's milk kefir, which is so simple, it's even more simple than yogurt, sauerkraut, super simple. And then mastering cuts of meat. So mastering, you know, how to make a nice juicy roast and a whole chicken are, yeah, definite skills that I think are worth mastering.
Mm-hmm. So do you guys have an expansive garden at this point? Tell us kind of, I'm throwing in this topic of conversation kind of as an addition, because I think this is one of the topics that people want to talk about the most, is like, where do I start with gardening? If I, you know, let's say I have a half acre lot and I want to build some beds, which by the way are so easy. Like literally you can build a bed so cheaply, with a drill and some screws. but if someone's wanting to do that, you know, in just their backyard, like what are some of the easiest things to get started with planting? What does your garden look like at this point? And what advice do you have for people who are kind of wanting to get started and maybe don't have the best green thumb or like literally just have no idea what they're doing and how to go about it?
So I am not the best at like growing my food for the year and then keeping it. I know some homesteaders are way like that's their goal, and I do not do that. I think that's really cool, but we do have a good sized garden, but we just plant all of the regular stuff. Like we always have a big bed with herbs in it. That's always a good place to start because you can add herbs to everything, and they're also really easy to grow, like basil, sage. Sage comes back year after year depending on, I guess, your climate, but it does here. Thyme, oregano, I throw all of that in a big bed, rosemary, and then we grow tomato plants and peppers, and what do we have in there this year? Onion, zucchini. But I'm a big fan of going to the farmer's market too and just stocking up on, like I have a whole bed of cabbages, but somehow my cabbage just never does that well. And so I'll go to the farmer's market and buy a lot of cabbage and then just ferment it all and then preserve it for the year.
That's awesome. Corey, what are you guys growing right now? I know you have like at least an herb garden, right?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. Well, we're growing a lot of fruit trees right now. So we have like lily.
Oh, that's the dream.
We're like focusing on fruits right now, but the herb garden is what we started with, and that's what's flourishing the most. And I think what a great like piggyback off of that was the tip that you shared, Lisa, is like for my age of kids that I have right now, Koa, who's almost four, like for him to have kind of an immediate, I guess like effect of something that he's done with an herb garden, as opposed to something that takes a really, really long time to fruit or to, you know, to grow, that was like really transformative to him because it made him so much more interested in being a part of the gardening process. And now there's not a single herb that's in our garden that we have planted. He's done like everything. He takes care of them every day. And then the thing with herbs, because they're so easy to grow, is you can do a lot of food trading with it. So I mean, depending on where you live, if you have a friend who has a garden or like, I don't know, mix whatever, like we do a lot of trades with our herbs for other things, and they're really easy to grow and flourish. And so yeah. Any herb you can think of, we pretty much grow it and in abundance. And therefore, I mean, I remember there was a time in my life that I would go buy mint, organic mint, and like,
yeah, now you're like mint,
right?
Like it's like a weed almost.
Yes. There were like a package from like Whole Foods was probably like $6 for this, like for like a few leaves. And I'm just like, what? Like,
yeah, now it's everywhere.
It's everywhere. We have way too much mint and
yeah.
constantly giving it to people or like, you know, putting it in our water. And, we plan on being in this house only for a few more months. There's not much that we are like wanting to plant before we go buy a house on some land, but the herbs, that's another reason, is like, even if you're like renting or something, like the herbs are just like such a great way to invest in something with like a pretty immediate reward.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They definitely are. Like I was thinking the other day, we bought a big pot of rosemary because I always put a big pot of rosemary or plant, a big plant in the corner. And I was thinking, you know, this plant's kind of expensive, but literally look how much rosemary I just got. Like if I was buying that from the grocery store in packages, I wouldn't even think twice about it. And this will be all summer.
Okay, Lisa, let's talk a little bit more about your current property and what that process looked like. So Corey mentioned that we've heard you say before that, you know, you kind of had this vision of a lot of acreage and living in the country, and your husband wanted to be maybe more, you know, close to the city and suburbia. I don't know if everybody is like this, but that is exactly the dynamic that's in my home as well. And I feel like that's so common for a lot of husbands and wives that, you know, the wives are like, let's go off grid and let's go buy a bunch of land. And the husband is kind of like, I don't know. I kind of like my like quarter acre lawn that I have to mow right now. And I don't want, you know, 8 acres of upkeep. So I'm curious, like, how did you guys kind of get on the same page? Did you just find the perfect property? What were you guys looking for when you started to search? You know, did you have like an acreage minimum or like features that you for sure knew that you wanted? Will you walk us through that journey of, you know, finding your home now and everything that you guys sort of wanted and dreamed of?
Yeah. So I think that most husbands are probably more practical. I think not always, but in a lot of marriages, it's always one that's kind of like, okay, let's actually like think about our lifestyle. And I will say that once we moved here, we were thinking about building on the property that my parents own, which is, it's hundreds of acres and it sounded great. But the only downfall is that it's very much in the middle of nowhere. So to actually get to, you know, like if you wanted to take the kids to the library or go to, you know, just head to town and go antique shopping or something, you weren't really going to get that type of thing up there. And after we've lived here a while, because it's the perfect blend, we actually live about 7 miles from a really cool town that has like restaurants and antique shopping and just everything. I'm very thankful that we didn't build up there because we do like that. We like being able to just run to town and, you know, maybe go to a farmer's market or go to a festival in the evening on a Friday night. They have all of that there. And so we're kind of in this blend of both. But my main thing that I was looking for wasn't necessarily an acreage minimum. I mean, I guess I'll say that I wanted at least 2 or 3 acres, mm-hmm. but you know, more I was looking for the privacy. So I wanted somewhere where the kids could run outside and not instantly worry about them, because at our last place, we were probably 50 feet from a really busy road. And so even the older kids couldn't just run outside without me worrying. Here, you know, obviously you have to keep an eye on the toddlers and the baby, but you don't have to, if the older kids run outside, you're not instantly worried about them. So that was my main goal. So it kind of more mattered how the property was situated, not as much the acreage. We would have taken up to however many acres we could have afforded, but it was more just the layout that we were looking for. Because like I tell people all the time, even this place, it's 7 acres, which isn't a ton, but we still haven't even come close to maxing it out. We have so much that we still need to clear, so much that we need to plant. There's pastures that we need to redo. It's really plenty. Mm-hmm. So the way that we chose this particular place was it had a really good blend of very private, just the right amount of acreage. I will say it's not perfect. No place is perfect, but there are a few things that, you know, if we could choose, we would not have it be the case. But, and then I also really wanted an old house. So that was, mm-hmm. I put in my search on Realtor, house 100 plus was what I was looking for. and then 5+ acreage within an hour of where we used to live. That was my search.
I love that. Tell me, what else is on your property right now? You've got your main home. Do you guys have like guest house or cottages or, you know, chicken coop, things like that? What does your property consist of at this point?
So we have a really cool barn. It's from the late 1800s. It has a huge loft where we're fixing it up so we could have like a party up there or something. We have hay up there right now because we have animals, mm-hmm. but it has three sections. So there's like a really tall, you probably have seen like wedding venues that have that kind of look to it. And then two lean-tos that have hay, and then we have a silo. And then we have a little guest cottage as well that we fixed up. So, and then we had another cottage, but we actually tore that down to put our garden in because it was it needed everything. I mean, it needed to be completely rebuilt. So yeah, that's what it has. It's actually quite a charming little layout.
Yeah. I love that so much. Anyone who follows me on Instagram or knows me in real life knows that Anne of Green Gables is one of my favorite stories of all time. And I love to envision myself in that lifestyle of like, everything's done at home and like everything is homemade. And I feel like that's kind of the life that you're living. And I really love it. It's just amazing. Okay. You mentioned that in looking for this new property, you really wanted to prioritize, you know, safety for your kids and have them have a space that they can really roam free without any sort of, you know, busy streets nearby or, you know, things like that. And I'm curious, what else did you guys want to factor in? Like what other benefit was there to you for raising your kids on a homestead? You know, obviously you guys homeschool and that's a big part of your journey. Tell us what else felt important to you in the decision to, you know, have this property for your children and have that be a part of their upbringing.
So we spend a lot of time outside. Like if it's nice out at all, we're outside for school. We're outside for the kids spend all of this afternoon slot outside. My husband's outside. We work from home. We school from home. We do everything from home. And so we needed more outdoor space to be able to utilize that. But then also we did want the experience of kids growing up on a farm. There's just a lot of things that you can learn from it with chores, with the cycles of a farm. So understanding little things like, well, the dairy cow has to be bred in order to make the milk. And that's something that you have to do every year, and the garden and just the seasons and all of that. We really wanted that experience and chickens and yeah, the whole cycle of everything.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. So with your kids and yourself included, because I assume you guys kind of did everything as a family, what were like some of the first projects that you guys prioritized whenever you were kind of building everything out? Because you kind of, you know, obviously start from scratch whenever you move. You spent a while renovating your house as well, right? How long was the renovation process? Was that a few months?
Well, we're still, I mean, we never did like a HGTV style, like where we live. We didn't live here. It was all just as we lived here. And so that's actually still going on. But I would say the biggest part of the renovation was whenever we redid our kitchen, and we got that done in the first year. I will say that it took about a year though to actually get that done. And then we moved on to a lot of projects outside. So we actually kind of did them at the exact same time, just different seasons. We worked on the house more in the winter, and then we worked on the outside stuff more in the summer, but we had to remove a building, add all the raised beds and the fencing. And then the fencing for the whole property was a really big deal. In order to have animals, we had to work on all that.
For sure. Yeah. So
constant project.
Yeah. So fencing, that makes sense, because you had to do the fencing before you brought in the animals. What was the first animal that you guys brought in?
Well, so we already had chickens, but we brought in goats first.
Okay.
And for that, we just did a little small fence off the barn so that they had a place where they could go into the barn. And then also that way we didn't have to fence in the whole property. But then once we fenced in the whole property, that's when we sold the goats and got the dairy cow, because I always wanted the dairy cow. And we actually milked the goats for a full year before we got the dairy cow, which was great, but it wasn't enough milk. We got like a quart a day versus over a gallon or, you know, more depending on when she freshened. So yeah, we've had the dairy cow now. We've had her for over a year, but she had the calf right out a year ago. So we've been milking her for a year.
Very cool. Yeah, I was going to ask you how much milk you're getting a day. So a little over a gallon is from your...
Yeah, a gallon to a gallon and a half. And we're actually, we still haven't weaned the calf, which is ridiculous, but we actually are going to be weaning her this week. And then apparently, according to all the other homesteaders, we will get a ridiculous amount of cream, which I'm very excited about because right now she saves cream for her calf, who is one.
Totally. So whenever you were first starting out with projects, do you look back and go, ooh, you know, had we done this in a different order, things would have been a little more seamless? Or are you happy with the way that things, you know, transpired as far as organization of like what went first?
I think so. Yeah. I think there are a few things that we would do differently. And people did warn us that whenever you have a homestead, you should live on it for at least a year and observe things before you start doing any serious infrastructure. Like before you put in the fencing, before you plant all the fruit trees, you might want to first observe, or before you fence in a garden. I think we do a few things a little different. Like there'd be placement of gates differently. Like there are certain gates, because we have several throughout, because we have like our yard fence and then we have the main fence and there's gates to access that. And there are definitely places where we would place the gates a little bit differently. But in some ways, I don't really know how it's possible without moving forward to really even know that. So I know that you're supposed to wait and observe, but I don't even know how you observe without using it as a farm. So
for sure. You said a year, right? That's what the...
Yeah, they say like wait through the season, see where the sun hits, see, just observe the property, what weeds come up, what trees come up before you do anything too serious, because you might have to remove certain trees for the garden, or there's just a lot of things that, you know, where the sun hits that, but I definitely wanted to jump in a little faster than that.
I would imagine.
So we made our best guesses and I feel like we did pretty okay.
Good. Well,
a lot of the things we did are fixable.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that does make sense to wait, but I would imagine most of our listeners would relate to you of just like, I would have such a hard time waiting that long.
Yeah.
And then, going back to your animals, I am so curious what you feed. Okay, so you have your chickens, your milking cow. What do you feed your chickens, by the way? Well, I would love to talk about like animal feed.
So a lot of free range, a lot of scraps that, you know, any kitchen scraps, things like that. But then we also do just get an organic layer feed. I find that if we don't do that, they stop laying. So I know a lot of people say, oh, mine still lay really great without supplementing with any layer feed. Ours just don't. So a little bit of both, you know, free range, they have access. We also have a chicken tractor. And so we'll move that around each day. So they have fresh bugs and grass and all of that. But then they also do have access to that feed.
Very cool. And then same with your milking cow, is she basically grazing on a lot of grass? What is she eating?
So we just moved her out to the pasture portion of our farm in this week, actually, because everything grew so slow this year. It was just a really cold spring. And all winter long, we get hay from a local farm. So we have a big loft and we just stack up there, just like a mix, grass mix hay.
Amazing.
And then during milking time, we give her a little bit of grain. So we give her some oats, barley, and alfalfa pellets. Sometimes we throw some sunflower seeds in there. And then I've heard we need to supplement her with diatomaceous earth, because apparently if you do that, they'll produce more cream. So we're going to first wean the calf, see how that goes, and then add it in. That way we know which thing made the difference.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting with the diatomaceous earth. I know it's really, I just learned this in the last year. It's like a really good source of silica. Is it more for like the mineral content, or like, I guess do you know why?
I really don't know why, but I've also heard supplementing them with B vitamins produces a lot more cream. So I don't know what part of the DE does it, but I don't know. I've heard great results. So we're first going to see about, plucking the calf and see how that goes.
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting.
This actually reminds me, I'm curious, do you guys have any, speaking of dichotomous earth, how have you guys kind of stewarded your property in a more, you know, non-toxic way? Or is that something you even have to do? I know you have some pasture area. I don't know if you have a lot of areas to like upkeep, but I just was thinking about this because I took my DE out yesterday and put it on all of our ant piles because they're just everywhere. And so yeah. I'm trying to think through this conversation of like, how do we kind of bring a more non-toxic approach to our home? And I'm sure you guys are well-versed in this with probably more like bug exposure that I would necessarily have like in suburbia. You know, how do you guys tackle this whole like bug exposure and lawn care and all of that from a like a non-toxic perspective?
So because we have so much fenced in and only one cow and calf, we don't have to worry about this as much as you would if you were trying to maximize our property. So with 7 acres, we actually could probably keep more, but by doing it, by not maintaining it, they still can get a lot even when you don't. But my husband is reading a Joel Salatin book right now. I'm trying to remember what it's called, but I'll actually just find it later and have you guys link it.
Yeah, for
but
sure.
But it's about that, about having pastures and making sure everything's maintained properly in a natural way. He's very sustainable and he does it in a way that is good for the earth and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be something that we really need to work on all of that. But right now we get away with it because
for sure.
We have so few animals. Yeah. And then as far as like in the garden and all of that, I'll do essential oil things, or I'll just pluck the bugs off, or I will just weed a lot, but we haven't used anything, any fertilizer or anything at this point, but I think we might have to, if we ever want to expand things.
Yeah, that's amazing. So one of our other most frequently asked questions, as I'm sure you can imagine, is just like, how do you do it all? You know, you've got 7 kids, you're running a business, you're homesteading, you know, you're cooking, doing everything at home, homeschooling your children. Are you a pretty organized person by default, or have you had to like implement rhythms for yourself to kind of keep everything on track?
I don't consider myself super organized, but that's probably just because I compare myself to my sister, who's extremely organized. There's a mom in our church who has like 10 or 11 kids. And she said, "You just don't know what unorganized is." Cause I told her I wasn't organized. And she was like, "Yeah, I think you just don't know what that means." So I am organized to an extent, especially with my business. You know, I have to be organized because I plan my content. I have a team that works with me. And so in order for everybody to know what we're doing for the blog posts and the videos and the podcast, I do have to stay pretty organized. But the thing about the doing it all is there's definitely some prioritizing that has to happen, as everybody can imagine. So like with my business, there's a lot of things that if I had 12 hours a day, I could work on and launch because that's my personality type, but I don't because I can't, because like you said, I homeschool. And as soon as this nap time slot is over, I could just pass the kids off on my husband all day, but that is not the priority that we have. And so, just the way that I do it all mostly is by hiring out things that I, you know, can hire out, and then also just prioritizing and then not getting everything done that I actually would want to. So I could make like 10 Instagram reels today, but I'm just not going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. I love that you phrase it as a choice, because yes, you guys do have the well, all of us that are on this podcast right now all have the same setup where, we are both, us and our husbands are at home and all like, you know, helping out with the function of the family business and then the kids. And, I love that you phrase it as, yes, I could choose to arrange it in different ways, but we had to prioritize, okay, what is important to us? How do we want to make this happen? When you are ending the day, I think there's a tendency for us who are kind of juggling a lot of things to end the day with a sense of uneasiness or dis-ease of like, did I do everything that I wanted to do today? Was I able to like show up for my kids the way I wanted to show up today? How do you find that ease at the end of the day that like you were able to like give your best and tomorrow's a new day? I guess like, what are your rhythms as far as like just having that ease at the end of the day, if that makes sense?
Yeah. I mean, it's some days I do and some days I don't. Some days I feel like I juggle things like I needed to, and some days I don't, which you guys both completely, you're the entrepreneurial type. You understand 100% that you're wired to do certain things that sometimes you need to pull back on. So usually the way I do it practically is I have a list every day of the things that I'm going to accomplish that day. So like, I'll have like, I need to shoot this certain video. I have a podcast at 1 on Freely Rooted, just a list. And then I make it a realistic list. So that way I can get it done in 2 hours-ish, because that's realistic. And then, you know, the rest of the day, me being a mom and cooking for my family and caring for my family. And if I don't do that, I usually feel pretty bad about myself.
At the end of the day.
Yes. Everybody else does too. You can just tell it didn't work out.
The lists are great, because it's not even that you're necessarily like a list person or like super like detail oriented, but like it still puts objective, like, hey, just like a few simple things on a piece of paper. I check those off and those are like what I need to do. That's fantastic. Okay. So shifting the conversation over to sourdough, because you're the sourdough queen. Yeah. and I understand that you have a free sourdough ebook that, we can link in the show notes on how people can get there. What is your favorite thing to make with sourdough? Because I'll tell you my favorite thing that you have put out is the French bread. My neighbor, she doesn't live there anymore, but her name is Maddie, and she learned how to make sourdough through you, and she brought over the French bread, and I don't think I've ever tasted like a better bread in my entire life. Like it was phenomenal. Nice. So that's my personal favorite, but I'm curious what your favorite thing is to make with sourdough.
Mine is bagels. I like the bagels because they always turn out, and they always turn out consistently. So sometimes, you know, if the temperature is a little bit warmer than the last time you made a certain bread, then you have to do certain things, or you could over ferment it. You need to keep an eye on it. I feel like with the bagels, they always turn out, and then they're also very versatile. So you can make sandwiches, you can have them for breakfast. I like how they look. They're really pretty. That's probably my favorite, but I like them all. I like the French bread. I like sourdough cinnamon rolls are way up there. Those are always a crowd pleaser. I bring them to all church potlucks.
Nice.
Yes.
You'd be like a really cool person to have at a church potluck for sure. Like Lisa's coming. Okay. We're good.
That's what I would think about you guys too.
So the sourdough guide is essentially like would you tell people like there, you can know absolutely nothing about a starter and you can walk into your guide and basically learn from step one?
Yeah. So I do have the instructions on how to make a starter in it. And then I also have like over 50 recipes. I'm trying to think of how many I have in that book at this time, because I edit it and then I update it, but I send it out. So if somebody does sign up for it, you'll also get an update. It's free, but you'll get an update whenever I update it. I need to get on that right now because I have a few more recipes since I last did it.
50 recipes is a substantial amount of recipes. That's incredible.
I'm pretty sure it has that. Maybe I really don't know. I think it does. I'm trying to remember how many I put in there. I know I have that many, but I'm trying to remember how many are in there right now. It's a lot though.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
That's amazing. I mean, I'm definitely going to go download this. I don't have the guide yet. Besides the sourdough guide, what are some other ways that we can connect with you online and support you from here?
So I have a podcast. It's called Simple Farmhouse Life. You can find it wherever you listen to podcasts. And then another great place to follow along is on YouTube. So youtube.com/farmhouseonboone. I upload every week, recipes, homemaking, all of that kind of stuff.
Love that. Lisa, thank you so much for being here today and helping us wrap up our season 3. And you guys listening, we will see you in the next season and have a great summer.